The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we started talking about metamorphosis. We've been discussing molting, and underlying all of this, I hope, the understanding that these are processes that simply cannot be understood from an evolutionary standpoint. And when I talk about understanding, if you're talking about ultimate understanding, then I am of the opinion that a creature really will never understand all of this. But where a person has rejected the idea of a creator, then it makes it not just difficult, but impossible, I think, to have a real comprehension, a real understanding of what is going on in the organisms as we see them. This subject of metamorphosis is one that really could get complicated quickly, and I do not have any desire to burden listeners, particularly those without much of an understanding of science itself, with oodles of terms, but simply in order to have a framework for us to discuss this in, I want to try and outline the possibilities as simply as I know how, and the terms, you may do what you wish with them. Some of them are a little complicated, and I will explain definitions for some of them. Some of them aren't worth worrying over, but there are some ideas, I think, that would be helpful as we approach the subject. First of all, there are two major types of metamorphosis. One is what is known as simple metamorphosis. And there are really three different kinds of simple metamorphosis. The term for the first is ametabolous. The prefix a, of course, simply means without. And ametabolous metamorphosis is simply a type of metamorphosis where the adults are wingless. In other words, whatever the larval stage is, all you're looking at in this particular kind of metamorphosis is just an increase in size. This is the type of metamorphosis that occurs in aphids, for any of you that have some knowledge of insects. And if you were to follow, there often are five instars, five molts in aphids. And you go from the simplest one, and you look at the pictures of the stages of these things, and just getting bigger. There are not any additional structures that occur. Wings do not appear, etc. It just allows for an increase in size. There is a porometabolous and a hemimetabolous. The hemimetabolous occurs in organisms sometimes referred to, by the way, as incomplete metamorphosis. But the immature, that sometimes referred to as nymphs, are all aquatic and gill-breathing. So this is the metamorphosis that will change these kinds of nymphs into winged adults. Porometabolous, sometimes referred to as gradual metamorphosis. And here the adults are winged, and the young, the nymphs, live in the same environment as the adults. That is, they're terrestrial, not water-dwelling. And as the names perhaps suggest, in the case of some of the true bugs, you look at the first two or three of the, three of the instars, you really don't see much difference. In the fourth, if you look at the dorsal side of the instar, all of a sudden you see some structures that are beginning to appear there that, as you watch them through some different stages, additional stages of metamorphosis, are gradually going to be producing the wings. Now, I am not interested in a lengthy discussion of this. If we were in an insect physiology class, we'd talk about those a little bit. But I simply want you to have at least a minimal understanding of the kind, the major kinds of metamorphosis. These are all simple metamorphosis. Then there is complete metamorphosis. In complete metamorphosis, you will have four separate stages. You have the egg, You have the larval stage. You have the adult. You have the larval stage. You have the pupae, some kind of a resting stage. And then you have the adult. The adult is very different from the larvae. There are no winged larvae. The larval stages of insects are worm-like, usually, although there are some differences. There are, half a dozen different types of larvae, and the terms, I don't know that it would be profitable for us to worry about them. Scarabeiform. This is the term applied to beetle larvae that most folks, I think, would describe as being grub-like, and elateriform and vermiform and so on. But while there are a variety of types of larvae, after they have undergone metamorphosis, the adults are very, very different. And it is this part of metamorphosis that I really want us to give some attention to. Let me read a couple of comments here out of the insect entomology text about this. By the way, for those of you that may have some biology at your disposal, the holometabolous metamorphosis, this term holometabolous is the term that you will use for complete metamorphosis. The immature and adult stages of insects that undergo complete metamorphosis are usually quite different in form, often live in different habitats and have very different habits. The early instars are more or less worm-like, and the young in this stage are called larvae. The different larval instars are usually similar in form but differ in size. The wings, when they are present in the adult, develop internally during the larval stage and are not everted until the end of the last larval instar. If that doesn't make any sense to you, don't worry about it unduly. Larvae do not have compound eyes. They may or may not have thoracic legs. They sometimes possess leg-like appendages, the prolegs, particularly on caterpillars. On the abdomen, larvae generally have chewing mouth parts, even those in orders in which the adults have sucking mouth parts. Following the last larval instar, the last stage of larval development, the insect transforms into a stage called a pupae, or pupa, P-U-P-A. The insect does not feed in this stage. It is usually inactive. Pupae are covered by a cocoon or some other protective material, and many insects pass the winter in the pupal stage. The final molt occurs at the end of the pupal stage, and the last stage is the adult. The adult is usually pale in color when it first emerges from the pupae. Its wings are short, soft, and wrinkled. In a short time, from a few minutes to several hours or more, depending on the species, the wings expand, harden, pigmentation develops, and the insect is ready to go on its way. If you ever have the opportunity of watching the emergence of an adult from a pupal stage, I would recommend that you do that. Sometimes in biology classes, teachers or students will collect caterpillars, feed them, then watch them as they pupate. And this is very interesting, by the way, to watch a caterpillar that has a variety of motions available to it that will actually sew itself up inside a cocoon, wind strands of material around itself until it has completely encased itself, and in some cases will have used some of that thread to hook itself onto a stalk or a stem, and then it stays there sometimes for several months. Occasionally during the pupal stage, you will see it move some. You'll see some quivering or some motion to it. But this is the time during which the insect is actually separated from the exoskeleton. And by the same token, if you have an opportunity of watching the organism emerge from the pupae, you ought to watch it, particularly if it's a butterfly. And having done this on several occasions, I know that when a person watches the struggle that the emerging adult is going to have getting itself out of the pupal case. And there are a variety of ways of doing that. Some of them have little teeth that slit the pupal covering and so on. But you watch, and the struggle is unbelievable. The desire on the part of a person who's watching this struggle is to get a pair of manicure scissors or something and snip through the pupil case and help the insect. Now, the difficulty, if you do that, if you were to decide to help the insect in that way, what you would have just ensured is that the insect would never fly. It is actually that struggle that it goes through that is part of the process of pumping fluid into the wing veins so that they will expand and allow the insect to fly. So with all of the sincerest motives, you are helping the insect, but in doing that, you are ensuring it will never be able to do what God wants it to do. Now, there are a lot of morals here I think we could draw, and I won't attempt to do that, but there are some that involve trying to do everything for our children. There are some things they need to do, and without the exercise, the effort and the exertion and the time and the learning that goes with that, there's some things they just won't ever be able to do. And you look at them and watch them and remember the struggles that we went through in order to do that. And our desire is, well, let me help. Let me do this for you. Well, the consequences may not be quite as extreme as they are in the case of helping the butterfly come out of the pupil case, but they are there nonetheless. We can talk about these from a variety of standpoints. Most of the butterflies will come out at night when the humidity is higher, so that the wings will not harden until the wing veins have been pumped full. Occasionally you'll see a moth or a butterfly that hasn't done that. They've done this during the daytime when the sun is shining, and you see them with crumpled up wings that will never unfold. But if you have the opportunity of doing that, you ought to do it. In fact, taking the trouble to get the caterpillars, feed them, watch them as they enter the pupal stage and as they emerge is something you will not ever see apart from that. And particularly for the benefit of your children, I would suggest you allow them that. And again, understand that these processes are not something that came into existence as a consequence of an evolutionary process, but they are simply evidence, again, of an intelligent creator who has chosen this method of ensuring that the organisms are going to be able to fulfill the place in nature that God has chosen for them to be.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.